Now the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Last week, the National Urban League released its annual State of Black America report, and so much for the idea that America is now a post-racial society, argues Leonard Pitts. His op-ed over the weekend cited the report, which found that African Americans are twice as likely as whites to be unemployed, three times more likely to live in poverty, and more than six times more likely to be in prison. Despite the election of Barack Obama, enormous and troubling disparities remain. Pitts also notes that whites and blacks measure progress very differently. For whites, he wrote, the yardstick is how far we've come from the nation we used to be. For blacks, the yardstick is how far we have yet to go to be the nation we ought to be. So is the measure how far we've come or how far we have left to go? Give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can always join the conversation at npr.org/talk. Leonard Pitts is a columnist for the Miami Herald. His commentary, Post-Racial America Isn't Here Yet, ran at CNN.com. And nice to have you on the program again.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And those two yardsticks, in fact, you say there's a considerable validity to them both.
Yeah, I think the mistake that people make is when they want to concentrate on one yardstick to the exclusion of the other. And typically, black people and white people concentrate on the yardstick that leaves their individual group with the least amount of work to do.
Mm-hmm. So for whites to say, look how far we've come, that's indisputable. We've come a long way.
Exactly. I hear that often from white people. Why do you keep talking about race? Look how far we've come. Look at, the president is black. The queen, Oprah Winfrey, is black. What else do you want?
Tiger Woods is on TV every week.
Tiger Woods is on television, et cetera, et cetera. And the point that I make to them is, you're right, look at how far we've come, but also look at the fact that the president, the man who's now president, had to go through a racial gauntlet unlike any other presidential candidate has ever had to go through, to reach that office. Had to have Secret Service protection earlier than any other candidate because of the racially based death threats against him. Oprah Winfrey, who was the other person that everyone cites, once was famously turned away from a dress shop, a high-end dress shop, because the owners thought that one of the wealthiest women in America was there to rob the place. So, you look at that, and if you take those two things, you get I think a more complete picture of where we are than you do if you try to, take one over the other.
And what you describe as the white yardstick, look how far we've come,
right,
lets whites off the hook.
Exactly. Just as the black yardstick does, if you focus on that exclusively. If the black yardstick is, look how much we are still hampered by racism, which we are, but if that's the only yardstick in judging where we've come, then you are denying yourself, you're denying your children the opportunity to take advantage of the enormous advantages that are available now that were not available 30, 40 years ago.
Is it fair to say that one yardstick emphasizes individual responsibility, opportunities there, you can take advantage of it if you're ready to, if you want to, and the other one emphasizes collective responsibility?
You could put it like that. I tend to think that both yardsticks are, as I said, a bit of a dodge for... I'm sorry, I thought I took care of that.
That's all right.
Are a bit of a dodge for...
Somebody calling to tell you you're on the radio.
I think both yardsticks are a bit of a dodge for those who don't want to deal with the very real responsibilities of looking inward and saying, okay, what is it that I, as part of whatever group I am, need to do? If you're white and your yardstick is, well, look how far we've come, then you really don't have to. You can close your ears to the statistics that you just read, which show that unemployment is twice as high in the African-American community. You can close your ears to the statistics about how the justice system basically throws away the lives of particularly young black men. You can close your eyes to all of that. If you are black and your yardstick is look at how much they have done to us, then you can close your eyes to the fact that despite all of those things, despite all of those inequities, there is a Barack Obama. So obviously there is some way to make it. There is an Oprah Winfrey. So obviously there is a way to make it.
It was interesting. Clarence Page wrote on this same subject. I don't know if you had a chance to read his piece, but he said that the Urban League, like most of America's old guard black leadership, focuses on race and plays down how closely the fortunes of America's new black middle class match those of their white counterparts.
Well, I think one of the problems with race is that it tends to obscure a lot of things. People tend to look at difference in skin tone, difference in melanin content in the skin, and forget that you know, for all that this very visible difference between us may portend, we may also have 100 other things that are in common. I may, as an objective standard, have more in common with my white neighbor in the middle class neighborhood that I live than someone who is African American, than I would with someone who is African American who lives in an underclass environment, in more impoverished urban setting. But I'm going to be looked at as, you know, as a twin with that person, and having all of the dysfunctions and having all the challenges that that person has, not only by society at large, but also by my white neighbor, and also by that hypothetical African American person.
Yeah, it was interesting. Clarence also split it slightly differently. He said there is a biggest obstacle to act black. There's debate over the biggest obstacle to black progress. Is it racism or a self-defeating culture within the black community? And I guess in some ways that's the same thing.
Yeah, I think it is the same thing. I think if you put a gun to my head and forced me to say, you know, what is the one thing that I would fix first with African America, I think that I would fix the problem or the epidemic of our children being raised without their fathers. I think that is a baseline that tends to lead to a lot of the other dysfunctions. But then, as I said in the CNN.com piece, once you've got the families back together, the families need a place to live, the parents need to be able to be employed, to support the family, you need health care, you need all these other things that are outside of the power of the African-American community alone to fix.
And too many times those fathers are in prison.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Our guest, of course, is Leonard Pitts, the Miami Herald columnist. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Larry, who's calling us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Very well, thanks.
Hi, Larry.
Good. My question is, or comments are mainly about, what about, we say post-racial now, but what about the people who actually have lived through, I'm an African American. My mother is 57 years old. So in Louisville, we didn't desegregate our schools until the mid-70s. She went to a segregated school, and she was taught systematically that she was inferior. And she's still alive today. It affects her today. It'll affect her for the rest of her life. And there are many, many, many other people. This was the policies that were in place, were set in place during a time when subjugation was okay. So how do we deal with that issue? I mean, to say it's post-racial, it kind of is demeaning to these people. I mean, they lived through a time when Dr. King, most peaceful person we've known, was murdered because he wanted people to have fairness. And that just, I don't know. And then the second comment is about the prison population. If, like you guys said, if you take a male father out of the family, you don't just hurt that male. I mean, he's sitting there with free cable TV, three hot meals, and no rent to pay. The family is destroyed. The children, the wives, the mothers. And
that presumes all those fathers were with their families before they went to prison, Larry, which is often not the case.
Well, sometimes it is, and sometimes it's not. But the disproportionate amount, I mean, blacks represent 13 to 18% of the United States population, but we're 40-plus percent of the prison population. Are we really that messed up, or is there other environmental factors? I mean, if you're subjugating a class of people, then they're restricted to a place. You know, integration wasn't a two-way street. Integration was blacks integrating to the white communities, because whites could go into black communities and blacks were afraid to do or say anything to them because, things could have, bad could have happened. So,
Leonard?
Well, to get to the first comment about post-racial, I couldn't agree more. I would make this one caveat, though. I don't think you have to be 57 to have experienced being taught systematically that you were less than, that you were inferior. I think that went on with the generation that the caller speaks of in terms of his mother. I think it goes on in much more subtle ways with the generation even today, with the exception of the fact that often these days those lessons are taught by African-American media gatekeepers. I think that the lessons that you are inferior, that you have less intellectual capacity, and that there are certain prescribed things that you are allowed to do, is pretty much part and parcel of much of what we see in popular culture created by and for African Americans. I think what's happened is there's a concept called internalized oppression or internalized slavery, and I think that we see a lot of evidence of that to this day in African America, where we don't need a white gatekeeper at the media company, at the movie company, at the television company, whatever, to put forth these denigrating and demeaning images. We do it ourselves.
Larry, thanks very much.
One quick caveat to that: blacks don't control the media. Never have.
They control parts of the media.
Yeah, BET.
Small parts and only what's allowed. I mean, Hollywood and has been portraying these images since the beginning of film and television, and these ideas of what black is.
BET, for most of its existence, was owned and controlled by Robert Johnson, who was a self-made black billionaire, and became a self-made black billionaire by peddling those images. He's just the most
right.
You know, he's the greatest example.
Did
of that.
What white
Larry,
society allowed.
Larry, we need to give somebody else another chance. Okay. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. We're talking with Leonard Pitts on the Opinion Page today. And again, if you'd like to see his piece that was printed on CNN.com over the weekend, there's a link to it at our website, npr.org/talk. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to David. David with us from Boulder, Colorado.
Yes, I'd like to make two points, and then I'm going to actually listen off when I hang up. As an African-American, number one, I think... we have guys like the guy here that continues to pimp the struggle. And I think African Americans at large have to accept the fact that we live in a world that people have crayon box mentalities. You might not be white, it could be Indian, it could be Chinese or what have you. But the truth of the matter is we're all sinners trying to be winners. That's the truth of the matter. I'm not saying that it's not true, the horrible history of this country, so forth, so on. But I guarantee you that as an African-American, if blacks were in the same position as whites doing the very same thing, I would be just as disappointed. It's about quality leadership. It's about vision. And it's about purpose. And I don't see that even with the black leadership as well as the white. I don't want to get stuck in this crayon box conversation. I think the soul of man is the most profound purpose of why we have something to offer to life. But I don't think the crayon box approach is going to solve anything. Now, my last point.
And quickly, if you would, David, please.
Say what?
And quickly, if you would.
Yeah, my last point is this, that... we can't continue to put more into the past than we do in our future. That's one of the biggest problems we have as African Americans.
All right, David, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to answer the first point because I don't know how we're defining pimp the struggle. So it's a little difficult for me to even accept that or deal with that. In terms of putting more into the past, I would disagree. I think we have it exactly the opposite. I tend to believe, you know, to agree with the aphorism that says if you don't know the past, you're destined to repeat it. And I think that is a great problem, not just with African America in general, but with in particular with the country in general. We really don't know where we have come from. And it's not a matter of knowing it so that you can wallow in it. It's a matter of knowing it so that you can say, okay, been there, done that. You know, let's try something else. Let's try something new.
Let's get Linda on the line. Linda from Central California.
Well, I just have to say that I was really impressed by the speaker, David, from Boulder. I'm suspect that he's a university student or professor there. I am a 63-year-old Caucasian American, grew up in California, never experienced a segregated society. But I need to tell you that I am really despairing. After working really hard on the Obama campaign, which also involved getting people of Obama's African Americans to register, and that was a struggle I never anticipated, I'm really despairing. I don't see any major public statements or commitments outside of Dr. Prasant, Alvin Prasant, and Dr. Bill Cosby's book and their speaking tour, but they've been lambasted and put down and criticized, and their motives have been besmirched. But I don't see any. I'm despairing because I don't see any efforts at making the future better. And I always was looking at I have noticed how far we've come by reading history, even though growing up in the Bay Area, I didn't experience that segregation. But I have noticed how our country has improved since I was a young person. I traveled in Texas with my family and saw the whites-only water fountains, which just shocked my 10-year-old soul. But I don't see responsibility. And the comment about the prisons, in the state of California, they can have conjugal visits, and there are many children conceived by lifers who are supported by the taxpayers.
Linda, hold on a second. I just wanted to give Leonard a chance because we're running out of time.
I really don't know where to begin. The first point, I guess, I take from what you were saying, Linda, that you're disappointed in President Obama because he has not fulfilled, I guess, what your notion would have been of speaking to the issue of race, which is not, you know, I don't think he ever ran on that, and it's certainly not. I don't think why most of those who voted for him voted for him. He, if you looked at the way he handled race during the campaign, he dealt with it when he had to deal with it, and he dealt with it well when he had to deal with it, but he made careful to be defined not as the black president, but as a man who happened to be black who was running for president. And I think that that's an important distinction. I think that that's how he has governed, whether you like his presidency or not. That's how he has handled his presidency. And I really don't think it's fair to dun him for having not addressed race when he never promised to or indicated he would address race.
And as for the issues raised by Mr. Cosby, all of that was raised well before the election.
Yeah, that was 2005.
Yeah. Okay. Leonard, thanks very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Leonard Pitts, a columnist for the Miami Herald. His piece, Post-Racial America Isn't Here Yet, ran on CNN.com. We have a link to it at our website, npr.org/talk. He also has a new novel out titled Before I Forget. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, hundreds of billions of taxpayer dollars to bail out Wall Street, many billions more to the car companies, plus nearly $1 trillion in the stimulus bill alone. How are we going to pay for all of this? Ted Koppel joins us. You be there, too. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.